session. The full rate webinar today, we're going to go through a virtual advising webinar and also give a run through of our application. So my name is Peter Rauchi. I'm an outreach officer at the Institute of International Education. I'm joined by my colleague, Catherine Mato. Catherine, please introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. This is Catherine. It's nice to talk with you today.
So we're going to go through some virtual advising and go through a walkthrough of the application for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. Catherine and I are going to demonstrate the catalog of awards and also the actual application. These are ways for you to find information and also, you know, get an understanding of how to approach the technical side of the application. We want to save lots of time for questions and answers. I know that we've received a lot of questions already, and we'll get to those. But I'll feel free to chat in questions as we go throughout the presentation, and we'll try to answer as many questions during the presentation, during the Q&A of the presentation as we can. If we don't get to your questions, we will follow up with you individually after the fact. So let's talk about the Fulbright Program. The Fulbright Program was established in 1946 by then Junior Senator from Arkansas, J. William Fulbright. The idea, the concept, the vision of the Fulbright Program is mutual understanding, increasing that understanding between people of the United States and the rest of the world. So this is really interesting from a historical standpoint, but it's also really key to understand this for making a strong application. You want to support your strong projects, your cutting-edge research, your teaching projects, whatever you hope to do, but with that as the backdrop, with that as the foundation, that you as a Fulbrighter are an ambassador. And successful applications contextualize the work that they're planning, the work that the applicant is planning to do in that concept. It's all about the impact, the connection, and the person-to-person diplomacy. Yes, we want to support your project, but the context is that you're an ambassador. Really important to make a strong application. The Fulbright Program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and administered by the Institute of International Education. For the U.S. Scholar Program, I want to talk about some very broad-based eligibility criteria. So for the U.S. Scholar Program, you do have to be a U.S. citizen. If you are not a U.S. citizen, there is a visiting scholar program which brings international scholars to the United States. That's a different program. So we can share information. If anyone is not a U.S. citizen on the webinar, feel free to chat that in and I can share information about the visiting program to bring international scholars to the U.S. Also for the scholar program, these awards tend to be for faculty, for administrators, for professionals outside of academia. If you are someone who is still in an undergraduate program or you just finished your BA or even if you just finished your master's degree program, you're likely to want to look at the Fulbright U.S. student program. So that's also a different program than what we're going to discuss today. And if you are sort of more interested in an award that's appropriate for someone with a recent bachelor's degree or even a recent master's degree, you know, chat that in and I can follow up with you about the U.S. student program. That being said, many of the awards in the U.S. Scholar catalog are open to folks with a master's degree in professional or academic experience. Many of the awards do, though, require you to be in academia and have a PhD. We'll discuss how you can actually find that information in the award catalog. Throughout the catalog, though, we do have awards that are open for folks who are practitioners, people outside of academia, artists, other kinds of practitioners. So you know, there are some nuances to, you know, the aspects of the awards, and I'll unpack how you can start to find this information in the catalog of awards. Also, a general baseline policy for any award that features teaching, there may be specific requirements around years of experience, for example, as a teacher or having taught, and that'll be written into the award description. There are also, I want to bring up new policies on Fulbright grants. There's no longer a cap and the number of Fulbrights you can receive in your lifetime, but you do have to wait 2 years from the end of one grant to apply to another grant for the U.S. Scholar Program. So really what is key for the U.S. Scholar Program is selecting the right award, and we have 470 different awards, and each one can have its own parameters, its own priorities. Each award can be looking for its own profile of applicants. So you really, really want to use our catalog of awards strategically to find awards that fit into your profile, but also into what you hope to do. You want to use the catalog to narrow your search. You can search by region, you can search by discipline, you can search by a number of different factors, and really dig deep into seeing what the award is looking for and how you fit into that award. What's really key is how is your project relevant to the country. You'll see different parameters around your preferred disciplines or preferred specializations. That speaks to, you know, what the country is looking to get from a Fulbright U.S. scholar. So you really want to understand how your project fits into resonance with the host country. Why will the host country benefit from your project? That's something that you want to think about when you're looking at awards. So what I'm going to do now is actually I'm going to pull up the catalog of awards and show you how to get some information and look at the different parameters that I've been discussing. I'm just going to pause for just a second as I pull up the catalog of awards. And here's our front page of the catalog of awards. So initially, at the very beginning of your search, you come across awards.cis.org. That's our website. You can search by region. You can search by country or area. You can search by discipline. But what I want to show you is an advanced search. So let's search for all awards, and that's going to pull up everything that's available. So yes, we have 471 awards available for the catalog awards. Now, on the left-hand navigation, you can see advanced search criteria. So again, you can search by region, you can search by country by typing in the country of interest. You can search if an award offers a multi-country aspect to it. Most of our awards, most of our 471 awards are to go to one country, but yeah, there are a handful, I think about a dozen awards that offer multi-country aspects. You can search by discipline, and discipline is very, very broad-based. You'll notice we have the discipline of art. Well, that will include dancing, performing arts, visual arts, creative writing, etc. We also have the discipline of engineering, so that's also super broad-based. That will include chemical engineering, civic engineering, anything that falls under the larger rubric of engineering. Again, when you're beginning your search, you're taking very, very broad strokes. Under activity, we can search for awards that support particular activities. Is it a professional project-oriented award? Is it a seminar? Does it only support just teaching? Does it support just research, or does it support a combination of teaching and research? You can search by grant length, so you can see, you know, different lengths of grants, and you can also search if an award offers a flex option. We'll talk a little bit about flex options later, but flex options give you the opportunity to segment your grant so that you're not away for the entire length of the grant. You can chunk your grant into different segments. We can search by degree requirements. So does the award require a PhD or other terminal degree, or does it not require that? We can also search by category. Is it a postdoc award? Is it for a distinguished chair? Is it a seminar for an administrator? You can search by professional profile as well. So is an award open to academics only? Is it open to qualified U.S. education administrators? And then we can search by letter of invitation. Many of our awards will require you to get a letter of invitation from a host institution in the other country. There's every variation on that, though. So some awards don't require you to do that. Others, it's optional or preferred or strongly preferred, and sort of every variation on the theme. So let's take a very quick initial search just to give you an idea of what an award looks like. Say I'm looking to do a project in law, and I'm not sure what country, but I want to do it in the Western Hemisphere. So let's pull up Western Hemisphere. And we see 9 awards in the Western Hemisphere that either feature projects in law or support projects in law. So they're either directly related to law or they are they can support projects in law. Let's pull up this. What I want to do, I want to show you an All Disciplines Award, just so that you can get a sense of what that looks like, because many of our awards are All Disciplines Awards, but then I also want to pull up a more specialized award. So let's look at the All Disciplines Award in Belize, for example. All Disciplines Awards tend to be very open-ended, and you're designing your project with very, very open parameters. For this project in Belize, we see, so when you click the award, you get four tabs that open up. You can see from this that the award is for 4 months. There's approximately one grant available, meaning that up to one person will be funded under this grant. This award supports just teaching or a combination of teaching and research. For the profile of this award, a PhD or other terminal degree is not required. And for this particular award, there's an identification of a potential host institution, the University of Belize. Not every award will actually identify a potential host institution. Many of the All Disciplines Awards don't, and they're typically open to any institution in the country. But for this award to Belize, we have an institution identified. There is not a flex option for this award, meaning that the award, you must be away for the full 4 months of the grant, and grants can begin in January 2019 or later for this. This is an All Disciplines Award, but there is a preference for the disciplines listed here. We can see agriculture, geology, medical sciences, social work, and then some additional information about specializations. So marine science, biology, and environmental science scholars will have access to the University of Belize's two marine sites at Huntington Cay and Calabash Cay for your research. This next tab under award requirements spells out some more information. So we see that a letter of invitation is required for this award, meaning that part of your application, you must include a letter of invitation. For language requirements, all activities can be done in English. This award is open to academics and appropriately qualified professionals outside of academia. However, there's a note. Applicants with a PhD are preferred, but applicants with master's degrees and substantial professional experience will be considered. At least 3 years of teaching experience is required for a project with a teaching component. There's some additional information about the potential host institution, the University of Belize. For the Calabash Cay field station, we actually even give contact information, so there's already contacts pre-identified that you can reach out to. If you are stuck and you're not sure how to get things going, you can contact a general contact at the University of Belize, Mr. Edward Robesot, and you can also email the U.S. Embassy. So that's another resource that's available to you if you don't have contacts in Belize. Under award benefits, we see different awards benefits that are available. This is a range. We don't actually confirm actual dollar amounts until we confer the actual grant, but you can get an idea of the kind of level of support that you would receive on this grant. In this award, it's broken down by the level of your profile, if you're an assistant professor or below, or an associate or full professor. You can see the different stipend amounts. You can also see that there's a travel relocation allowance and a book allowance. Then under special award benefits, we see this note that in the Western Hemisphere, you can apply for additional funding to travel to another participating Western Hem country to pursue, you know, a short-term project or a short-term experience. It's really designed for a seminar or a workshop or a conference. You can't spend, you know, 1 of your 4 months in a different country outside of Belize, but you're eligible to go to a short-term trip and apply for additional funding for that under this special award benefit. So this is an idea of what an All Disciplines Award would look like. And again, I was looking for an award in law. This award is open to all disciplines. It doesn't specifically feature law. Law is not a preferred discipline, but you can propose a project in law under this award. And I wanted to demonstrate these are a lot of All Disciplines Awards in the Western Hemisphere. I want to, though, demonstrate a more award that has a bit more of a focus. So let's look at, Canada has a wonderful award in policy, law, and governance. So this award is a bit of a different profile. It's a Fulbright Canada Research Chair. This is a specialized opportunity to be part of a host faculty. This award supports projects in a combination of teaching and research or just research. You do have to have a PhD for this award. And for this award, Canada has identified some pre-existing host institutions. Potential hosts are actually identified and broken down by specialization. So you can see it's the Valsillie School of International Affairs. They're looking for projects that specialize in things like conflict and security, global political economy, migration, mobilities, and social policies. In the McGill Chair, which is focused on international development studies, they're looking for specializations that include sustainability, formal and informal institutions, international development. There's another chair at McGill that's focused on jurisprudence and judicial review. The University of Ottawa has a number of potential institutions for this award focused on public administration of social justice or immigration policy, among other topics. And finally, the University of Saskatchewan features specializations that include public health, immigration policy, and things of that nature. This is a four-month grant, and there's information about when the grant can begin. These are the preferred disciplines, but the major discipline for this award is law. For this award, a letter of invitation should not be sought, but you're encouraged to reach out to the institutions to discuss your research interests. And if you don't have contacts at the host institutions, you want to email the Fulbright Commission in Canada. English is sufficient for this award. If you're proposing affiliation with a Francophone institution in Canada, French language ability may be required, but McGill, even though it's in Montreal, is pretty much an English-speaking institution. So for this award, you're fine with English. A special feature of the Canada Research Chair Award is that with this award, you're identifying your host institutions in order of preference in the project statement. So you're able to be considered for, you know, multiple affiliations under this award. And as we can see, the potential hosts here are different institutions with different specializations. And again, for this award, you should not seek a letter of invitation. I want to look at one more kind of award. So we went from the All Disciplines Award, which is very, very open-ended, to the Research Chair Award in Canada, which is very focused and has potential host institutions already identified. Let's look at the Social Sciences and Humanities Award in Mexico. So this award, again, we can see it's a 3 to 9 month grant, 3 to 9 month grant under the award details. It supports projects in just teaching, just research, or a combination of teaching and research. And this award is open to appropriate disciplines that would fall under the very wide rubric of social sciences and humanities, but really prefers projects in economics, law, political science, et cetera. So you can see the specializations here.
So Peter, one of the questions that we received is about the kinds of institutions that can host. Does an institution have to offer a PhD? Can a person collaborate with, say, a technical college or another kind of institution?
Sure, that's a great question. The limit to who can host you is really bound to the parameters of the award. In general, unless it's specifically stated otherwise in the award description, no, you can absolutely affiliate with institutions that don't offer PhDs. We have many awards. So, for example, Barbados and Eastern Caribbean, while we're talking about the Western Hemisphere, many of the potential host institutions that have been identified are actually community colleges. So there's a wide variety of potential host institutions, and you're not, unless otherwise stated in the award description or if there's already a host identified, you're not conscripted to a type of institution. Generally, most of our host institutions are universities, but you may be able to be affiliated with an NGO, a research institution, a cultural institution, certainly projects in the arts. So there's a wide variety. You want to just pay attention to what it says in the award details. So for example, under locations, you'll have details about any kind of any kind of considerations around that. So for this award, the Mexico Social Sciences and Humanities Award, COMEX is the Fulbright Commission in Mexico, will actually follow the U.S. Embassy constrictions around travel warning. So if you're considering an institution that is on the travel list, you definitely want to be in touch with COMEXIS and ask them about, you know, recommendations if this is an appropriate institution. Under award requirements, we actually give contact information for COMEXIS. So if you're not sure of if an institution is appropriate, in many cases you can reach out to either the embassy staff, the Fulbright Commission staff, or at the very, very minimum, you can reach out to IIE's program staff. And you can see my name here. I manage Western Hemisphere, so you can reach out to me if you're not sure if something's an appropriate institution.
And something else I just want to add, sorry if I can jump in for just a second, the award titles themselves can sometimes indicate that a particular host is identified. Sometimes it's not clear from the award title, so something that I recommend kind of keeping in the back of your mind is that the award titles, you can't always read a book by its cover, right? So sometimes the award title may say science and technology, but it may actually have a specific host in mind within that. Other times it may be like this one where it's really, really open. So take some time and spend some time exploring the catalog. And by all means, I mean, Peter and our other colleagues on our outreach team are more than happy to help to answer questions and to help to, you know, help you to find that right fit for you.
Right. And thank you, Catherine. And I think, you know, hopefully demoing some of these awards is really helpful for you to see, and you can see the different kinds of awards that we have available in our catalog. With 471 different awards, you want to really pay attention to the parameters of each award and understand how you fit into the award, and also, you know, what the award, you know, in terms of your profile, but also what the award is looking for academically and professionally, and, you know, these kinds of considerations. I want to speak on one other aspect of the Fulbright program before I hand over to Catherine for an application run-through. I want to talk about ways to make Fulbright work for you that you may not have considered. So many of our awards offer a flex option, meaning that you don't have to be away for the entire length of the grant. You can segment your grant. Many of our awards are appropriate for folks in different levels of their career, everything from postdoctoral awards all the way up to distinguished chair and everything in between. As I mentioned, most of our awards are focused on going to one country, but there are a handful of awards, about a dozen, that are either regional in focus, or certainly we have the Global Scholar Award, which gives you the opportunity to go to two or three countries in at least two different regions. So the Global Scholar Award, if you're interested in going to more than one country, you may want to look at the Global Scholar Award. So these considerations are ways to think about the Fulbright program that you may not have thought about before that can really make the difference between, oh, maybe I'm not up for a sabbatical this year, but could I take 2 months off and go to a country that offers a flex option? That might actually work for you. Also, I want to really stress the point that home affiliation is not always required. Many of our awards are open to artists, professionals outside of academia, independent scholars, scholars emeritus, and folks in different stages of their careers. So really, you want to pay attention to the parameters of the award and understand, you know, how you fit into that award and how you hope, how your project also, you know, your profile, but also how your project fits into that award. And with that, I want to hand over the presentation to Catherine so that she can give you some considerations about the application.
Great, thank you. Okay, so actually, Peter, I know you just switched over to you. I'm going to switch the actual presentation back over to you from me so that you can actually keep the PowerPoint going. Let me just switch that over. So thank you to the audience for your patience on that, and we'll get that PowerPoint back up for you.
Okay, I have the PowerPoint.
Awesome. Okay, and then we'll switch it over in a few minutes. Okay, can you go to the next slide, please? Thank you. Okay, so in thinking about preparing your application, we have guidelines on our website, we have instructions on our website, We have a lot of different details, and I encourage you, like you're spending time in looking and figuring out where you want to go, you also want to think about what it takes to get there. So the materials that you'll need to present and the different components of those applications. And you'll also want to think about how the application is being reviewed. And we'll talk about that actual process in a few minutes. But the criteria on the screen here are really a summary of the criteria used to evaluate the applications in that review and selection process. Ultimately, those who are reviewing the application really want you to demonstrate that you're qualified and really able to take on what you propose to do, that what you're proposing is sound and that you've really thought it through and that you can adapt it if you need to. Many of our alumni have commented about how they have had to adapt their project once they get to the country and realize that, oh, yeah, this isn't going to quite work the same way that I had anticipated it doing it happening. In thinking about the project being sound and well-planned and providing the context in the project, it's important to think about that there's going to be reviewers from a number of different disciplines, so providing enough context for someone who is in your field to understand the technical pieces that need to be conveyed, as well as someone who's outside of your field to make sure that they also understand it, that it's not too technical and too filled with jargon, that they're not going to be able to really understand what it is that you're trying to accomplish and how it will benefit and how it will contribute to the field and to the community and so on. It can be helpful if you've done similar work before and if you've, had international experience before, but that isn't necessary. And one of the neat things about Fulbright is that it is very much open to people who haven't had these experiences before. But either way, you need to show that you've done your homework and that you are prepared for this project. And you need to show that in your actual application and not just say, hey, trust me, I can do this. But actually, demonstrate that in the project statement and in the CV and in the other components of the application. The last piece that I want to highlight are these, there's the outcomes, there's the impact and everything, and there's also, the quality of the project, but there's also the personal aspect of this. I mean, the Fulbright program is really about that cultural diplomacy piece. Peter, I think if you can mute yourself, that would be great. Awesome. Okay. So the cultural piece, that personal piece, I mean, ultimately Fulbright is a cultural diplomacy program. So it isn't just about the academic piece of the project. There is, engagement with the host institution. There's engagement with the host community, while you're on that grant and in that host country. There's also the piece when you get back. How are you going to share your experience? How are you going to what is going to emanate from that experience, not only, in terms of publications and exhibitions and all of the kind of expected, tangible outcomes from a Fulbright grant, whether it's teaching or whether it's research or a combination of the two, but what else? How are you going to give back to your community to share more about your experience? How are you going to, to use a little bit of a cliched, phrase, how are you going to make the world a smaller and better place at the end of the day? So, okay, next slide, please. Okay, so what goes into that application? The things that you want to think about are the list that's on the screen. I don't really want to go through all of these different pieces. We do have other webinars that we'll talk about, in more depth. We have a whole webinar on how to complete the application and upload all of these fun things. So we'll, as I said, we'll talk through these. Peter said that we'll run through them and not walk through them, and that's going to be the case for these as well. The application itself is online. The project statement is a up to 5-page document where you are telling, describing what it is that you're planning to do, why it's important, why does it need to be done in this country, and so on. And we have a lot of guidelines on our website to help with that. The CV or resume. We do have page limits on these documents, so you want to be mindful of those. You do want to follow the directions. This is, faculty and instructor students. We are instructing our applicants to, to read those requirements carefully. The course outlines are syllabi, so if you're applying for a teaching or teaching research grant, you would be expected to include that information to help assess your application in terms of what you propose to do for teaching, your teaching philosophy, that kind of thing. There's a bibliography, and that's for the research and teaching research applications, and that's to really demonstrate that this project, you know, is well-founded. You've done your homework. This is in some ways like a literature review for your project or the reference list before you actually write the paper, right? Letters of reference are required. There's three that are required for the application. And then depending on the award, you may be expected to provide a language proficiency report. I know in the Western Hemisphere, many countries are expecting applicants to have some level of proficiency with Spanish or Portuguese. Other countries, you know, around the world may have other requirements. Again, read that award description. It'll tell you some more about that. An invitation letter. We've talked a little bit about host institutions. We have great guidance on our website about the invitation letter, what that means, how to find that, how to ask for one, and so on. So there's a lot of resources and help there. Our Fulbright alumni also can be really, really helpful with that piece. Supplemental materials, so if you are in the arts or architecture or, you know, any of the creative or performing fields or journalism, there's additional documents that you would be able to upload to your application. How do you get to this application? Well, you can start from the Fulbright Scholar homepage and then go to Programs and then click on Scholars and then on CORE or the appropriate opportunity there and then on Application. And then click on application login, and then that will take you to the IIE programs page. The next piece the other way that you can go is by starting the VAT awards catalog and type that in, and we'll pick an award. So if we go with the Western Hemisphere, and we click on this award, the Barbados and Eastern Caribbean, sounds like a great place to be for a grant. So then there's these great buttons in orange up here at the top. So then there's Apply Now and the Application Guidelines. Well, yeah, you want to click on Apply Now, right? So that will take you back to the same place, and it will link you to the application. So I've already created a login, so what you'll do is you'll enter your key information there, your email address, create an account, and then you'll be able to start your application. As I said, we do have a full-length webinar on submitting and completing this whole application, so I'm really going to breeze through this. We have preliminary pages here asking, you know, have you had a grant previously, are you a U.S. citizen, and to which program are you applying? So, more than likely, if you're listening to this webinar, you will be applying to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, not the Fulbright Public Policy Fellowship or the IEA Award. And if you're not sure what those are, you're more than welcome to check those out in the awards catalog. But generally speaking, you would be applying for the U.S. Scholar Program. The others would be named as much in the award titles. So then you'll proceed and you'll stop over at that instructions page and you'll read over those instructions. We are about to publish a walkthrough PDF of all of the application questions and how to answer them. So if you have any questions, it's a really, really handy document. You can print it off before you get started and have it right there beside you as you're completing the application. So I would stop there first. There's a link to the catalog in case you needed to have that up again. It's a really handy page to have up while you're completing your application. And you'll also then scroll over and start the application. So you'll enter your program information. So that's, you know, what country or what program are you applying to go to, what's the grant activity, that kind of thing, you know, whether it's teaching or teaching research. Then you'll enter your professional information, so that's your employment information. You'll enter your academic credentials and more about your background. So if you've received multiple degrees, you'll enter the number of degrees here and fill out their information, that degree information here. And then keep on scrolling through to to the academic discipline and primary specialization section, and that's really for the project itself. So if your project is in, say, restaurant appreciation, that would be, you know, what you would list in here. And we'll have a full list of those disciplines and specializations. So when you click on this, you'll see, you know, if I click on business, I'll only see the fields that are within business. So we'll be able to you'll be able to scroll through a more searchable list, so it's a little bit easier to navigate. You'll enter your accomplishments, any experience that you've had abroad in the past 6 years, and then you'll continue on to the next page. So the next pages are more about you and information that's important to fill out there. Again, you know, take a look at those instructions. Sometimes there's requirements here, like you have to have a full 9-digit zip code, that kind of thing. So just make sure to pay close attention to those. And then after completing that page, you'll go to the references. And the references should be pretty easy to complete. You'll enter there, you do the waiver first, take a look at that. And then you'll actually register your referees here. So you'll put in their information, and then you'll basically send them an email through the application system itself, where they'll be able to upload their reference letter. It really works just like when you receive a reference letter request from a student who is applying to go to graduate school, for example. Now, we talked a little bit about language requirements. So for some awards, as we mentioned, there may be language requirements, French or Spanish or Portuguese or other, depending on where you're looking at going. And those would be identified in the award description. So let me pop open that award again. So over here in the award requirements, in this case, for Barbados and the Eastern Caribbean, all teaching will be in English, and you don't have to have additional language proficiency. Now, that may not always be the case wherever you're applying, so take a look at that section before you, get too much further in this application, just to make sure that you've got all your bases covered. And then you'll go ahead and say, you know what, it's not required for this award, so, you know, if you want to complete the self-evaluation, if it is appropriate, go ahead. Otherwise, if it's, you know, required, you'll click on that top button. If it's not required, that middle one. And if you're already a native speaker, if you've, you know, grown up speaking that language or have native speaker, you know, proficiency, then you can go ahead and click on that button. And you'll go through and answer the questions here. There's a self-evaluation piece, kind of a two-part self-evaluation piece, with the competencies, and then there's text boxes to fill in. And then we get to the external evaluation. So some awards also require you to have an external evaluator to evaluate your language proficiency. And this is where you would register their information. And it looks and acts just the same way that the reference letter section works. So you'll enter their information, and then you'll go ahead and click on that Invite Evaluators button, and then they'll get that email. Now, I do want to note that email doesn't come from IIE. It actually comes from Embark, from our application system. So you may want to let the people know who are providing these references and evaluations for you, just so they know, you know, that email doesn't go into their junk folder. Okay, so this is another place where you'll want to have that award description up, and that's the project details. So we've got, the project title, and we've got your abstract, and that's the summary, just a brief summary of what you're planning on doing, and then the preferred host institution. So there was a question that came in about, you know, who should the host be? How do I find that? As we were saying, you know, some awards do have a host that's already listed, so you can go ahead and type in that university name here. So if you just start typing university, you're going to get a really long list because lots of universities have the word university in them. However, if you were to, you know, if this were the Canada award that Peter was showing you before, if you were to type in McGill, then all of a sudden you'll actually find that institution. Now, I have selected an award that's not in Canada, so if you were doing that, you would want to make sure, of course, that the award and that the institution are in the same location, right? So, you know, make sure that those match. If you're applying to an award in Canada, you want a host institution that's in Canada. So we have more information about the host piece, but that's, again, another spot where, you know, I would look to the award to guide, you know, on the host institution piece and on the invitation letter piece, whether or not one is required. And then we have more information, you know, to be completed on that page. But those are the highlights there. And then the following three pages are more about different documents that have to be uploaded. So we talked about the project statement. Again, there's a lot of guidance on our website that is covered here as well. We do try to put it in multiple places, so it really is easily accessed by you while you're completing the application. There's a place where you'll upload your CV and then the other application components. I will note, so all you have to do is, in this case I've already uploaded one, but okay, so you click on the trash button if you've already uploaded one and you know, you need to replace it, but you click on, this would be blue normally, and that would be clickable, so you'd be able to click on that and then upload your document, and then you can click on this fun little button that has the arrow on it, and it will show you that document. Now, this, of course, is a test application, so there's not much of a project statement here, but if you needed to replace that project statement because maybe by chance you uploaded your CV to this page instead, double check just in case it happens, you can go ahead and hit that trash button and repeat the process and upload the document that you meant to upload in the first place. So there's a place for supplemental materials, there is a publicity survey, there's a place to certify that everything in the application is, you know, true and accurate and everything. And then the application itself will go through a quick review to make sure that all of the pieces are submitted, you know, all the answers are entered correctly, et cetera. Now, it won't tell you if you're over page limits, so we ask you to double check that before you submit everything and to make sure that your answers are correct, because it's checking more for the format of the responses and not the content of them. So you'll want to double check that the content is correct because you, of course, will know that best. Okay, so that takes us through the application, okay, in a really fast way. Peter, let me switch it back over to you. Great, so the review process is a multi-phased review process. So we start with an initial technical review of the applications to make sure that they are complete and that applications that you're eligible for the award to which you've applied. And there, that is followed by a discipline committee process, a discipline committee review. So it's a two-phase peer review process. I should start with that. It's a two-phase peer review process where discipline reviewers initially are looking at your application from that discipline perspective. So, for example, if you were in engineering, you know, maybe in mechanical engineering, it would be other mechanical engineers or people with mechanical engineering experience who are reviewing your application. It wouldn't be necessarily aerospace engineers, for example, reviewing an application for, you know, mechanical engineering necessarily. So that is where it's important to make sure that your application has really addressed, you know, the technical pieces, because they'll be looking for that, right? But the other piece is the regional review process, and those are where committees of people are with experience in that particular country or region are reviewing the applications from more of a regional, a broader perspective. And they may be in the social sciences, they may be in the arts, they may be in the sciences. It's usually a combination of all of those. So it may be that there's one person on the panel who has a science background but may not have that mechanical engineering expertise, where you want to make sure that the whole committee, you know, is really able to understand what you're trying to convey in terms of the purpose of your project and how you'll accomplish it and why it's important, and why it's important for you to be in this country to do it. So after that point, the two-phase peer review process, applicants will be notified of the outcome, and then those applications that are recommended following that process, those applications will move forward to an in-country review and review by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. And that board is appointed by the department, by the president, and works with the Department of State. So it's really a multi-level review process. And again, I can't emphasize enough that there's people from different backgrounds and different disciplines who are reviewing the application. So bearing that in mind when you're thinking about your project statement and other components, to think broadly about those review criteria. At that point, once we have all those different approvals from that second phase of review, then applicants would be notified of whether or not they were selected for the grant. And then after that, you would be, selected. If you're selected, you'd be preparing for your actual grant. So then kind of comes the celebratory piece and actually preparing and packing and all that kind of fun stuff. So next we have application resources. So, Peter, I can talk a little bit more about this, or you can feel free to jump in. But we have, as I said, we have a lot of information and guidelines and guidance on our website. We have some really great resources in terms of people. My colleague Peter, our other colleagues on our outreach team. If you're at a university, you may have a Fulbright Scholar liaison on your campus who may be a really good resource. The alumni are terrific resources for you as well. And they, having been there and done that can really give you some additional insight that you may find to be really helpful as you prepare. Peter, let me try.
I think I want to mention too that, we won't belabor this slide. Just know that you're not alone in this process, as Catherine stated. You'll receive as follow-up to this webinar all the slides, but also some useful links to our website. Our website is really vast, and we like to sort of break it down and articulate it a little bit more so that you can navigate and find things a little bit easier. So we'll follow up with you with all the resources, but we break down every aspect of the application from project statements, from how to approach letters of invitation, who to ask for a letter of recommendation, and things of that nature. We also have a robust webinar series that's ongoing, but also we archive every webinar, so if you can't join us live or you want to review something, that's really, that's at your disposal as well. We have lots of resources available, so we won't spend too much time on that. We want to get to your questions. But before we do get to your questions, we want to also encourage you, and the best resource is us, so reach out to us, engage with us, scholars@iie.org. Please reach out to us if you have questions that we don't answer or that come to you after the fact. You can also join my Fulbright, which is CIES2.org. That's a way to indicate your interest either by country or by discipline or some combination to really get segmented information about the Fulbright program. Our website, again, wonderful resource. We're on all social media platforms, and we even have a referral procedure where you can refer your colleagues. If you think that there are colleagues that might be interested in Fulbright, you can refer them to us through a mechanism. So with that, I want to thank everyone for joining us. We want to take as many questions as we can. We have about 10 minutes. If we don't get to your questions, though, I'll follow up with you individually. But Catherine, what kind of questions do we have so far?
Sure. So the references, how many references should an applicant include, and who would they be from? Should they be from a mix of industry and academia? Should they be from our institution here in the States, or should their prospective host institution, provide a reference letter? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So you, as an applicant, need three letters of recommendation. Wait, I'm sorry, Catherine. Was it recommendation or invitation? I'm sorry.
Yep, you were right. Recommendation.
Okay, recommendation. So
it's an important distinction. Definitely important.
It's a huge distinction. So keep in mind, again, you know, some awards require a letter of invitation, some don't. Every application requires three letters of recommendation. We are open-ended about this to some extent. The letters of recommendation should come from a blend of people that can speak to who you are and how you fit into the Fulbright program. In general, it's a good idea if you do have a home affiliation in the U.S. to have someone from your home institution in the U.S. write one of the letters. If you're applying for a teaching award, one of the letters should address your capacity as an instructor, but really it's open-ended. The only sort of absolute no is obviously no relatives, but also the person that's hosting you in the country overseas, that actual person should not write one of the three letters of recommendation. It can be someone else from that institution that writes one of the three letters of recommendation, but again, the actual host faculty member that will be hosting you should not write one of the three letters of recommendation. So I hope that's fair about, you know, the letters of recommendation requirements. We're looking for 3 letters of recommendation, and they should be 3 strong advocates for you that understand what you're doing and how you fit into the Fulbright program. And I recommend getting in touch with them and having a discussion about what you're hoping to do, and even sharing our resources with them, sharing the award description, so that they can think about how they can craft a strong letter of recommendation for you.
Great, thank you. A question came in about alumni and how people would find alumni to contact.
Sure. One of the resources that we have on our website is our scholar directory, and similar to our catalog of awards, you can search that by many, many different criteria. You can search for colleagues that are at your same home institution. You can search for folks by discipline. You can search by the host country, the host institution. So that's actually a really good resource. What I do want to mention is that in the scholar directory, the home institution, in the U.S. is associated with the Fulbright alum at the time of affiliation. So they may have moved on. If you see something that's, you know, a few years old, that person may not still be on your campus, but you can certainly search by your campus, for example, and see who has received the Fulbright Award. And that could be a really good resource for you. That's something that you can approach your colleagues in campus through our scholar directory. And again, there are many, many different criteria you can search for. I actually had an applicant, I was talking to someone who's applying to the Netherlands, and she wasn't sure if the host that she was talking to in the Netherlands had ever hosted a Fulbrighter in her discipline, and we were actually able to find the fact that they have through the directory. So that's a really good resource for you.
And that directory, if you go to the CIS.org website, it says Fulbright Scholar Directory on it, and you can search by Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, because we also have the Visiting Scholar Program. So you'll start with the U.S. Scholar Program, and search by the type I think is CORE. But if you have any issue, you know, trying to navigate that, please feel free to reach out. The other thing I want to mention about the directory is that for privacy reasons, we don't have email addresses listed. But I can almost guarantee that most people that you would want to try to find, you can Google them faster than I can have explained all of that information to you just now. So many university websites, of course, you know, are pretty easy to search. So finding a contact information doesn't usually take too long. Now, a question came in, and I realized that we're running a little bit short on time, but I think we have time to answer this one. If, you know, someone is proposing a teaching and research grant, you know, it's still a 5-page limit for the project statement, and they're asking, well, how do I fit all of everything that I want to say in those 5 pages? Well, You want to be, of course, concise with your thoughts in that. It does need to, you know, have the 1-inch margins. We are looking for, you know, the 12-point font so that you're not, you know, trying to use the space, literally fit more into the space than you can and you know. But really having other people read your project statement before you submit it, alumni can be great for that. Other folks on campus can be really helpful for that. Other scholars, people in the field that you work with, you know, can be very helpful to read through to make sure that you're covering the necessary points. I guess, Peter, do you have any guidance in terms of how to cut it down? Because I know it can be so hard. You want to cover so much, but you really do have these pages, these limits.
In 5 pages, you have to, describe your project, write it for different audiences, so you have to write it for your discipline, but also for a generalist. If you're doing research and teaching, you have to sort of break that down as well. Really though, you know, look at it as, I hate to use like a hack term, but it's almost like your 5-page elevator pitch. This is not a complete, total description of it, but you know, could you boil it down to 5 pages where we get a good sense that you know what you're talking about, you have a plan to put it in action, and you know, can you express that? Keeping in mind that we send, you know, 800 scholars abroad every year. So it's, your people are doing this, your peers are doing that. So I think Catherine's suggestion, if you're stuck, you know, for me personally, editing is really difficult, but if you're stuck, having feedback from your peers is really helpful. in what you can cut. Also, I want to sort of piggyback on that, because you are writing for your discipline, but also for generalists that are, you know, specialists in the country or the region, getting feedback from someone that's not in your academic discipline can actually be really helpful to you, because you may not be aware of if you're using too much jargon or if you're using too much, you know, discipline-specific terminology that a generalist will not have any idea what you're talking about. So getting that feedback from your colleagues is really, really, I think, key and helpful. And you know, again, we send 800 scholars abroad a year, give or take, so, and, you know, your colleagues are fitting this into 5 pages. So getting that feedback, I think, is really key.
And, you know, in talking to a lot of alumni over the years, I would say the majority have had at least, you know, 4 or 5 people review their project statement before submitting it. I know it can be a little nerve-wracking to put yourself out there that way, but they've, you know, generally, you know, they strongly recommend it for the reasons that Peter notes, especially that, you know, it's so easy to get caught up and say, oh, well, of course everyone knows what this word means. But when it's kind of, it's not even jargon, it's really coded, you know, and it has a particular meaning in the context of your discipline, it can be sometimes easy to forget that. And, it, you know, pay, spell check as well. Like sometimes we turn off spell check when we have a lot of really technical words. So making sure to turn that on and going through all of the you know, red squiggles to make sure everything is spelled correctly is important. Fulbright does have 1 L. Just wanted to note that. And if you are trying to figure out where to find those details about those application guidelines, when you click on our website and click on that core page and then onto U.S. Scholars, we have a whole section on our website with application guidelines with all of these different tips and the requirements with the page limits and all that stuff. And it's also built into the application. So, again, we're just trying to make it as easy as possible for you to be successful.
And again, we will follow up with everyone who registered for this webinar with some helpful links that sort of articulate our website in a way that might be a little bit easier to find specific things. You know, so no worries about writing down URLs or anything. We'll actually follow up with you on that. So Catherine, I think that we're out of time, and I do want to thank everyone that joined us. If we didn't get to your question, I will actually reach out to you to answer your question. But if you think of something else, absolutely feel free to contact us at scholars@iie.org. And we really appreciate your time and look forward to receiving your applications.
Thank you, everyone.